internet, and welcome to another Tadpog podcast, where three old guys. Yeah, I'm sorry, three old guys. Talk about a special episode.
Talk about a new game.
Yeah, breaking tradition for a special episode. Talk about the BioShock, a little BioShock Infinite, and a little bit about the BioShock series as a whole.
Yeah, I imagine we're probably going to slip a little bit.
I know I am. I'm intentionally going to talk about the whole thing.
Okay, cool. If this is the first episode you're listening to, I urge you to stop listening and maybe listen to an older episode to get an idea of what we normally do on the show. And also, if you have not played BioShock, BioShock 2, or BioShock Infinite to completion and care about story,
this fucker's gonna be full of spoilers.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and say that we're gonna spoil these bitches right off the bat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's Jacob again. Jacob just entered Tadpog Studios.
Hi, everyone.
Hey,
Jacob.
Hey, what's up, you guys?
What are you doing here?
Nothing. I just decided to stop by and see how things were going. Are you guys recording a podcast?
Yeah, we are. Would you like to sit down with us?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Okay.
Do you like BioShock, Jacob?
What do I love?
I
love BioShock. Everyone knows that I love BioShock.
Yeah, we didn't.
Are you guys talking about BioShock
today on the show?
BioShock 2 and BioShock Infinite?
Well, I'm mainly going to talk
mainly
about
BioShock
Infinite
because
I don't remember 2 that much.
Yeah. So I guess here's the thing that I want to say just in regards to that spoiler. We will probably talk about it'll probably be we talk in depth about BioShock Infinite. We'll probably talk a little bit about BioShock because I'm still trying to talk Dave and Tyrone into having a special
three-way. yeah.
All right.
I guess this is happening, Jacob. I hope you still want to be on the show.
I tried to talk them into doing a special BioShock episode that is a standalone. But I will say this. It seems to me that there are a lot of people out there who have not played BioShock 2. And I understand that. You don't necessarily have to.
And certainly, I wouldn't recommend someone to play BioShock 2 if they haven't played BioShock.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into it more. I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, why we like each episode in the series. But I imagine you are probably a little bit safer. Like, if you haven't played BioShock 2, I don't know that we will be delving too deep into, like, the spoiler territory for BioShock 2.
I gotta tell you, I'm probably not going to spoil BioShock 2 because I can't even fucking remember what happened in that game.
We're going to stick sort of the Ken Levine BioShock.
You play as a Big Daddy. I remember that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't remember the story.
A special edition Big Daddy.
Yeah. So we'll mainly be dealing with BioShock and Infinite. Those are the two that we are going to spoil the shit out of. You guys don't know me as well as you know Dave and Tyrone, but please listen to my words. If you have not played BioShock or BioShock Infinite, turn this podcast off right now and go play them because they're wonderful. They're wonderful games.
Which one's better? I'm going to start off right off the bat. Which one do you like better? If you had to choose right now, Desert Island.
Yeah.
You can either bring BioShock or BioShock Infinite to Desert Island. What do you bring?
Gosh, Sophie's
choice. One is going to be obliterated from mankind's memory.
Oh, my God.
That
can't happen because of the ending of BioShock Infinite. That's a really hard question because
that's why I asked it. I'm putting you on the spot. You want to be on the show.
Yeah,
you got to answer the hard questions.
Okay. I think if I were to play one game, like if it was a Desert Island situation,
yes,
I would probably pick BioShock Infinite. If it was a situation where one of them was destroyed from the existence, I would pick BioShock. I think BioShock is more...
So wait,
No, I would want
Infinite over, okay.
Because I think as a whole, I liked the Infinite experience more. I think, like, the game from front to back was more like a singular thought.
How do you mean?
BioShock, after the twist, became a very different game.
I agree.
Became a very different game.
I lost a lot of interest after the twist.
And not a game that I was particularly interested in playing. Mm-hmm. I did. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas Infinite, up through the very end, I was interested in finding out what was going to happen next.
Tyler, what about you? Desert Island, Bioshock Infinite, or Bioshock?
But real quick, let me say this, that the first Bioshock, I think, it's more important. Like, has to exist. If I could replay one game and have forgotten about my previous experience with it, that's the one, because I want to experience the first three quarters of that game again.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
I'm going to put the original Bioshock up on a pedestal.
Okay.
And always choose the original Bioshock.
Why is that?
And I have a bit of a monologue about it.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right. I don't know if you're familiar with Southern Baptist traditions of, like, when someone will give their testimony in front of church.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone giving their testimony, like, they've lived in the world of sin, and they're getting up, and they're telling their life story about how the darkness, and then the Lord saved them, and they get their whole, like, conversion story.
Okay.
Yeah.
When it comes to gaming, Bioshock has a similarity to me.
Okay. How so? Because,
all right, I had rallied against Final Fantasy XI when it first came out. Whenever friends started playing it, you started playing it first, others started playing it, then I got hooked into 11.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost exclusively the only thing I played for, like, 4 or 5 years. I mean, that was it. I missed out on a huge chunk of the PlayStation 2, Xbox, GameCube generation, because that's all I did was just Final Fantasy XI.
Mm-hmm. Fish.
And
fishing.
I got to the point where I had several maxed out characters. I had in-game gear, and then I would just fish for money. And I did the huge achievements for fishing. And culinary school for me was 8 hours of class, 8 hours of Final Fantasy, 8 hours of sleep. I did that for, you know, almost 2 years straight. And I think any gamer, any hardcore gamer, should spend one year on an MMO. But just one. So they get the lingo, the understanding, the terminology. But more than that gets problematic.
I am reacting to this story in the same way I imagine someone reacts to, like, someone standing up at an AA meeting for the first time. Like, mm-hmm. You're telling me this stuff, and I'm like, I've been there, brother. I've been there.
It was a drug, almost, that MMO, because, you know, I had exclusive Final Fantasy friends, and I would tote my computer back, sit up in McElwain's house for the weekend and fish and talk to friends as they came in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was it. Whenever...
We'll all miss you, own noobs, rank one child golf cup.
Because, yeah, I had Melf after Melf's acid arrow from D&D was my black mage and do everything else. I played Melf, you know, all throughout culinary school. Whenever I graduated and came home, it waned a little bit, so I was able to get away from it a bit, and then got married, moved to Washington, D.C. while Meg started her master's program, and then I started to get back into it. The stuff with seminary and financial aid is crazy, but we got a big check, and we wanted to, you know, get something. That's when Blu-ray players were incredibly expensive,
mm-hmm.
and there had been a huge ice storm in Paducah that, you know, demolished the area. Like, mm-hmm. it was national news, this ice storm.
Right.
And it messed up my parents' roof. And my dad fixed it on his own, got a big insurance check, and with part of that, they bought new flat screen TV for me. You know, I got it to DC. And I said, well, we got this nice TV, we should get a Blu-ray player. Mm-hmm. Well, a PS3 is just a little bit more than a Blu-ray player. Let's just go ahead and get that. So I got the PS3, used it exclusively for Blu-rays, and I played Final Fantasy XI. And then, I forget, something happened, like Final Fantasy was down, or I couldn't get a party together. And one in the morning, I left, drove to Walmart. The closest Walmart was like half an hour away. But I drove to Walmart. I was walking in the video game department just looking at stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they had Bioshock. I'd heard a few things about it. Like, people had talked favorably about it. It was like, back then, it being on sale for $13 was huge. Like, you can get it now that much everywhere, and cheaper. But back then, it wasn't new, but to get it that cheap, I was like, well, that's like the first game for my PS3.
Yeah.
Bought it, brought it home. If that hadn't been for sale and all the events leading up to me getting my PS3, I probably wouldn't be in a place to do this podcast. Like, I would just be MMOs and then just been done with video games. The experience of BioShock brought everything back. It brought me back to consoles and different genres, and it kind of made me see all the games, all the humor, all the inside, everything that I just missed out on by being so sucked into Final Fantasy XI. Because it always holds a special place to me because it pulled Maxwell's silver hammer out of my arm and got me back.
Dave, how do you feel knowing that you were one night that Tyrone couldn't get a party together away from this being Jadpog?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I think it would have, what is Jadpog?
Jadpog.
Jadpog.
Jacob and Dave play old games.
Well, I mean,
so close.
I don't bring a whole lot to the show. So it would have been either a Tyler-centric show or a Jacob-centric show. So I don't think it really, I would have been okay. So definitely BioShock for you, Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah. It just sitting down and putting in the disc and then playing the first 20 minutes just were complete game changer for me. Utterly and completely. Lights off, just seeing the Bathysphere go through that first as you cross and seeing the lights as you come into Rapture and then seeing the Splicer for the first time scuttering across.
Yeah.
That was it.
I will
game
say.
Game changed.
I think that the first time I had an experience with a video game where it was like, wow, this is what video games can be. I think the first time was, I will probably be getting this wrong because I did not have this game. I just watched other people play it, was the invasion of Normandy in, I think, the first Medal of Honor. When you're at D-Day landing on the beach at Normandy and first-person perspective, having to fight your way up and feeling the pressure and feeling the stress and, you know, how they communicated the chaos to you. And
just feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Feeling something as opposed to, you know, Doom, where nothing much matters. I don't know that I'll ever have an experience like that first 20 minutes of BioShock playing it for the first time, just because it's such a like mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, this is what this game is going to be about.
It's a slap across the face, really. I mean, I don't mean that in an insulting way. It's just kind of like a,
dude, what?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, shit. Video games.
Yeah. Pay attention.
Yeah.
This is about to be something special.
I think I'd take BioShock Infinite to the desert island.
Okay, why?
Because this is a pretty bad reason, maybe, but I feel like I've gotten my, I don't want to say money's worth out of BioShock.
I get it.
But I feel like I've explored BioShock enough while I haven't explored BioShock Infinite enough.
I get it.
So it just boils down to I would like to spend more time with BioShock Infinite.
And I also think that there's probably more mechanically to do in BioShock Infinite. There's more to master in Infinite as opposed to BioShock, where, you know, you have the gun or you have the plasmid.
Right.
You know, there's so much to do in regards to, you know, Vigors and the guns and the Skyline and the Tears. Like, there's just a lot more moving parts in Infinite.
Right.
So I totally get that.
It's really BioShock you play once, maybe twice, and then there's not a lot more. Once you see the twist, and then you can play through saving the little sisters or killing the little sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're about done with BioShock.
I'm glad you brought that up because I want to ask you both. Did you save the little sisters or did you harvest the little sisters?
We're not monsters. We saved the little sisters.
I had a girlfriend who made fun of me because I wouldn't harvest the little sisters. Mm-hmm. And it's not even just that I wouldn't harvest the little sisters. I feel like it shows a failure in character to not save the little sisters, because you've got Atlas telling you that they're monsters, but they're representative of little girls. You have to do what you can to try and save them. Like, it's not, I don't know. If you just went into the game, and I understand, I couldn't do it. I couldn't play through a second time and harvest. I harvested one time on a playthrough and was like, no, I'm never doing that again. I hate it. I hate the way it feels. That's not, it's the same reason that I couldn't finish Shadow of the Colossus. Because I started playing Shadow of the Colossus and somewhere along the way said to myself, I feel like I'm doing an evil act. I feel like I'm doing something that is not good, so I'm not, I can't.
You kind of are
yeah,
in that.
I cannot continue to play this. So, but yeah. So I'll save each one of those sweet girls.
I harvested them.
Oh, dang.
I did.
I know. I feel like we've talked about this.
We have talked about it. So I'm a monster. But I did it because I picked up the audio log that implicated the doctor as being a Nazi.
Yeah.
So I didn't trust her. Mm-hmm. I knew she was in charge of the little sisters.
Yeah.
They kind of look like little girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I trusted Atlas. So yeah. I harvested them.
I see you're being tricked.
I didn't do it from a place of darkness.
Yeah, more Adam. Gotta get more Adam. Yeah.
I mean,
I feel like the one that talks about her being a Nazi was like hidden in a place that was hidden in plain sight. And I feel like my first playthrough, I missed it. So that was a thing that I did not know until much later.
Well, that's another thing. I'm glad you bring up missing the audio logs because I've listened to other shows talk about BioShock Infinite, and apparently I missed a lot of voxophones in Infinite, but apparently I missed some kind of major ones because there are some that legitimately put a whole new perspective on the story.
Yeah. I feel like I did a pretty reasonable job of going over that game with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, me too.
I have no clue where they are.
Yeah. I missed 10 voxophones.
I missed 10 as well.
I have no idea where they are. I guess I never thought about that in BioShock 1. Like, you're kind of, you have, you know, one side where you like, okay, I don't want to hurt these little girls. And then you were tricked.
Almost. Oh, yeah. No, I bought it. No, not almost. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I trusted Atlas because he's the only character in BioShock who reaches out to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything else is so alien. These small girls, they look undead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going around with these large lumbering monsters. And then I find evidence that the person who wants me to save them is implicated as a Nazi.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna based on that evidence, I'm gonna, you know, not harvest them for power, but
see, I can see where what happened to you is better than how we played through, because I can see that making the twist.
Oh, I was mad.
And even
when the twist hit. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was also the thing where it's like, but also after the twist, this goes back to what you were saying, Jacob, is after the twist, there's like another quarter of the game.
Mm-hmm.
After the twist, I felt like the game was over for me.
Yeah.
Because the game became me being so mad at Andrew Ryan.
Yeah.
And then, spoilers, like we said in the beginning,
yeah,
I mean, when you kill him, the game was over for me.
Yeah.
I kind of lost my investment in the game.
Because there are three endings to BioShock. One is the super good ending where you save everyone. One is the basically bad ending where you don't save everyone.
You unleash splicers on the surface. And
I never saw that one, I don't think.
Well, that's the third one. That's the like one where you harvest everyone. If you harvest everyone, you like unleash
splicers. That's why I didn't see it. Because after I found out what has happened, I started saving little sisters.
And then there's like the middle one where it's just kind of like a middling ending. And I feel like that is a problem in the game design, is that it doesn't give you the opportunity to redeem yourself. It doesn't give you an opportunity to say, oh my God, I had no idea about this, and now that I know, how do I change?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know, is unfortunate. That the game says, oh well, you didn't trust the Nazi doctor, and you really should have, so.
Well, you know, it inspired me to play through the game again with that knowledge, saving all the little sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So the endings, God, I got to be honest with you. It's been so long since I've got the endings that I can't really remember the difference, other than I remember the good ending.
Oh,
where good ending, you know, so all the little girls are
their hands.
Yeah,
I didn't cry, but I certainly got choked up watching just that last scene of all the hands coming over. And I don't know, what do you call the hero in BioShock?
He's Jack.
Jack.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, that's his name.
Jack is a lot more faceless than Booker in BioShock Infinite, because Booker very much is integral to the story. While I think that in BioShock, you're kind of playing a faceless almost nameless.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Which I can see, because that's positive and negative, because I like in Infinite Booker, you get a complete story.
Right.
But I like it in Bioshock 1 because you can kind of, I'm going to compare it to, this is the awful, shitty comparison, I feel bad about it.
All right.
But, okay, in Twilight.
Okay.
In Twilight, Bella is written to be a blank slate so that every girl reading Twilight can picture themselves as Bella and experience it. I feel like that's kind of the same way with Jack. Jack is kind of blank. You can put yourself in Jack's shoes and experience everything as Jack does as you play through the game.
I feel like that's certainly by design, especially because so much of it is about, you know, there's the story of Bioshock, which is, you know, of your character going through Rapture, but there's also the meta story of, you are a video game character. How much agency do you have as a video game character? Why are you believing the people that you believe as a video game character? So it's like that is happening, which the game is served by having Jack be a faceless, basically nameless character.
It is. And actually, I think that's a really good point. I'm glad that you bring it up, both of you, because one of the, I guess I wouldn't really call it an issue, but a conflict that I have playing Bioshock Infinite with while you're playing Booker, well, you find out all these things about Booker and all these not so good things that Booker has done in his life.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets to the point where in the beginning, when the action all kind of starts to happen in Infinite, is all based around you throwing the baseball at the interracial couple.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. In the beginning, there's a fair in a massive twist that literally had my jaw on the floor, they bring out an interracial couple who are basically tied to stakes, and you have a baseball.
Right. And you're urged to throw it
at them.
That's your prize.
Right. Now, I have to be honest with you. If I would have known anything about Booker and his life, I would have thrown the baseball at them.
Yeah.
I didn't, because I was playing as, well, I was repulsed by the idea of doing it.
Yeah.
But had I known going in who Booker was, I probably would have wanted to stay true to character and thrown the baseball.
Yeah, you're making decisions based off of your own personal moral calibrations as opposed to this game, which dictates that you. But that's sort of the interesting thing, too, is that my understanding of it is that if you try to throw,
I was just about to ask what happens.
I threw it in my 1999 playthrough.
What happened?
Same thing. You get caught before you do it. I don't know, because I know when you save them, you meet them later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they see a tattoo. You meet them, they thank you, and you get a clothing item.
Right.
I didn't make it that far in 1999 mode to know if.
It's almost the sort of continuing the meta story of Bioshock, the same in the way that the Lutices are presented, that how much of a choice do you have?
Right.
We present you with the illusion of choice.
Right.
Is it an actual choice? You throw the baseball, you don't throw the baseball. Things are the same thing. You pick heads, you pick tails, same thing. You pick the bird, you pick the cage. It's the same thing. It's just all the illusion of choice leading toward the same place, constants and variables.
Yeah, which I find holds up until the very end of the game, where you make change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That bugged me. I know, Tyler, I asked you which choker you chose for Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the bird. I know you told me you chose the bird.
Bird.
Yeah. And there is no change, there's no difference other than appearance if you give her the caged choker, is what I hear.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, there's not.
That is what I have heard also.
I feel like Booker and Jack, they're not the, I almost don't want to say they're not the main character. Rapture and Columbia are the main characters in both of the games.
I think Rapture is definitely the main character in Bioshock 1. And I think that's evident that the game continues after you kill Andrew Ryan. Because I think it could be argued that Andrew Ryan is the main character of Bioshock.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think that for me, Andrew Ryan is the main character of Bioshock, and Rapture is the main character of Bioshock 2.
I think, yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
Because it's, like, that's, that is the appeal of Bioshock 2. And I enjoyed Bioshock 2 and played through it all, played through Minerva's Den, played through all the DLC and enjoyed it, loved it. But the reason that I enjoyed it is because I was able to dive back into Rapture for another few hours, because it's such an interesting world that they have crafted. I cannot wait for the DLC for Infinite.
Yeah.
Just because I love how those guys make a level.
Well, I think that Columbia is an important character. I think the city itself is an important character in the game, but I really do think that Booker / Comstock is a brilliant way to actually tell a story about a person for once. Because I don't think, obviously, there wasn't a story about Jack in Bioshock. So I thought it was the twist, of course, in Infinite. Spoilers, is that...
Which, if we still need it, we're going forward with the assumption that you have played through both of these, so we don't need to hold your hand.
Otherwise,
so.
You would just think we're weirdos. Why? They're talking about, like, it's like they're too into this. They're being really weird now. Like, but their dicks out when they're talking about this. Well, yes, they are, but that's not the point,
right,
listener?
The quote is rock. The quote-unquote boss of Bioshock Infinite is also the main character.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know that. You find that out. That actually leads me to another question. Booker, first statement. Booker and Comstock are the same people. Did you know? When did you know?
I didn't know. Basically, it took me up until the
baptizing. Yeah, I didn't get it until then.
I feel better about myself now because I know I was the same. I honestly did not put it together until it was presented to me.
Yeah,
I know a criticism that a lot of people have is that they figured it out way before it was revealed, and because of that, they kind of lost interest in the story.
Yeah, but I feel like the thing, and something that we have not even touched on yet, is that for me, nothing like that didn't matter to me so much. I thought it was lovely and interesting and brilliant, but the thing that mattered to me the most was probably about, I don't know, a quarter of the way through the game, this ceased to become a story just about Booker, and it was about Booker's redemption story in regards to Elizabeth.
Right.
Because Elizabeth is... we were talking about Bioshock 1's about Andrew Ryan, Bioshock 2 is about Rapture.
Uh-huh.
I think Infinite is about Elizabeth. Infinite is, for me, Elizabeth's story.
I think it's... Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but I think it's hard to differentiate because it is about Elizabeth. I think, honestly, man, I could say that I think it's equal parts about Booker and Elizabeth, because I almost feel like they are equally important.
Totally.
And that may have been actually a design decision, because later on it's revealed that Booker is Elizabeth's father.
Yeah.
You don't know that going in, so it's not as important. But I think once you realize that and kind of like think back, you can kind of put things together and realize the importance of things you've seen. Like the scene with the guitar.
Oh my gosh.
And her singing. That's...
It's...
I enjoyed seeing the actors do that at the end.
I did too. Yeah, at the end of the credits.
Wonderful. Like, and great, 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 great voice work in Infinite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just wonderful voice work in Infinite. Ah, there's like... Those guys, they created those two characters so well.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I do. I totally agree that it's... But I feel like the reason that I feel like it's less Booker's story is because at some point, sort of in the same way that Booker stops thinking about delivering Elizabeth to get rid of his debts and just is thinking about getting Elizabeth safe.
Right.
Like, I stopped thinking about Booker's story as much and focused more on what is happening to Elizabeth, what, you know, what are her secrets.
Sure.
That's just how that manifested in me.
And to hit on design, it could have been so fucked up if they hadn't done Elizabeth so well as they did as a companion.
Yeah.
Because this could have been, like, the worst flub of an escort quest ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they handled it. I'm very thankful that they handled it the way they did.
What's that? My least favorite part of the first two Bioshocks were the moments when you had to escort the little sisters.
Right.
Because, you know, like something happened to the little sisters and I was inconsolable about it. But when that message popped up in Infinite that said, Elizabeth can take care of herself. You do not need to worry about her during combat.
Right.
It was like, oh, weight off my shoulders.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because she will get out of the way of your gunfire, which is a nice touch, because not only can she handle her own, but if you accidentally shoot her, you're not going to injure her, but they take the time to animate the model in a way that she shies away from your gun barrel and that kind of thing.
It doesn't break your belief during the,
exactly, whole encounter. Exactly.
It doesn't take away from, because had she been constantly like dying, you would have gotten frustrated with the mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
Paid less attention to the story and the experience of playing through.
And I always felt really, really bad, hollow almost, when there's story in the story when Elizabeth is not with Booker.
Yeah.
I would always feel like, I gotta get Elizabeth back. I missed her. You know what I mean?
Or when something would happen and you would disappoint her.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because it's so easy for a male-female relationship in a video game to automatically manifest itself as a romantic relationship, especially when, you know, it's Elizabeth is very pretty in-game, blah, 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 blah. But they designed it in a way that made it feel very much like a familial relationship, I felt.
Sure.
And I think that part of it is because, you know, Elizabeth spent all of the time in the tower, so she didn't really have a lot of interaction with people, so the way that she interacted was very naive, like a child would in some cases. And
the more you talk, the more actually I think I'm coming around to you saying that Bioshock Infinite is Elizabeth's story.
Oh, yeah.
Because you physically see her emotional mental transformation, because her character model changes throughout the game, representing her actual
maturation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Booker matures as well, but it's not so symbolic as Elizabeth says.
Yeah. I feel like the moment that convinced me that it was Elizabeth's story is, this is the last time I'm going to say anything about a spoiler. But seriously, if you've not played through the end of Bioshock Infinite, this is a spoiler. The trip back to Rapture, when she kills Songbird.
Uh-huh.
Like, that moment of her making a decision to kill a thing that she has feelings for is, like, that's the, for me, the point A to point B that is like, wow, okay, this is kind of a totally different person than I started this journey with.
Just as an aside, and this isn't nearly as deep as the shit we've been talking about, how awesome would it be if they patched Bioshock so that Songbird is now on the ocean floor in Rapture?
Well, there's...
Or you could see that. You could be walking through Bioshock and you could see that through one of the windows.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
You see down Booker and Elizabeth in the room, and you see it happening.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
Well, there was a weird. There's always a lot of Reddit talk on this podcast, but I did see at one point in like the Bioshock subreddit where someone said, if you listen to, I was just playing through Bioshock again the other day, and if you listen to this section really closely, you can hear what sounds like Songbird's scream. I don't know if there's anything to that. And I listened to
that's probably whales.
It's probably whales, yeah.
I listened to the clip that they had uploaded, and it was like, I can see where you're coming from with that. Maybe I can also see where it's whales.
And maybe Songbird, maybe that's an intentional design choice, audio design choice, to make Songbird's shriek kind of sound like a whale.
And I really want to believe it. So,
oh, God, yeah.
So I'm more willing to believe it.
to go back, something I saw on Reddit, that something meaningful about Bioshock. I read a comment or a big post about, fuck your PS4, fuck your Xbox One, fuck your next-gen graphics. It's no substitute for good storytelling. And because Bioshock Infinite's graphics are good, but the character models are still cartoony.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth, the storytelling, Elizabeth's character, and just the minimal facial reactions convey more than making sure every wrinkle in a face or things like that in the next. Like,
well,
a lot of people fear that what Bioshock Infinite is it's just, it's going to be hard to hold on to what that is as we progress forward.
Sure. And I think that that's actually, if I have a criticism about Elizabeth, it is her appearance.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she, and this may be on purpose to set her apart from everybody, but she looked a lot more cartoony. She looked a lot more stylized than anyone else in the game.
Yeah.
And I imagine that might have been so she could emote with her face.
Really pops.
Right. But still, there were times where it kind of took me out where I was like, her eyes are enormous.
She looks like a Disney princess.
Yeah.
So I can totally see why you would say that. It didn't bother me, but I can totally see why you would say
that. And it didn't bother me throughout the whole game. Yeah. It was just from time to time. It'd be exactly like that. Nikki was watching me play at times, and she would even say, her eyes are big. And I'd think, yeah, she kind of looks like a Disney princess.
Where you would look at one of the Lutices or look at one of the people on the boardwalk and then turn around and see her.
Right.
It's kind of a totally different thing.
Right.
At least you didn't have Dead or Alive breast physics.
True.
Like she rips open a tear and then you just see the 5-minute boob jiggle.
Right. And by that you mean it's a shame that it didn't have it, right?
Obviously. I feel like that's the other thing, too, about storytelling is that there are... I'm going to get kind of like... I don't know. I'm going to get in a weird place with this.
That's fine.
Like,
feel it.
This...
Lord bless you.
Between this and Walking Dead, no spoilers for The Walking Dead, but emotionally, to have these two female characters between Elizabeth and Clementine that you care...
You feel responsible for.
So deeply for. And it was so refreshing also to... Because there are moments in the game where Elizabeth is sexualized just by virtue of, like, the costume that she is wearing. But for the most part, that is not what your relationship with Elizabeth is about.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that, like, certainly that is not what your relationship with Clementine is about. But it's so easy to turn a female in a game into... you know, Lara Croft circa 1995 or whatever, where you're just a pair of breasts and a big head and then you're done. But they really took so much time into making these women so incredibly important. And I don't know, I would argue that it's a bigger step to have Elizabeth be in this game than it is to have, like, the protagonist of Bioshock be a female. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like Elizabeth did more for women in gaming just by being Elizabeth than it would have been to have had, you know, a female protagonist, like a Lara Croft or something like
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I originally thought it was a little weird when Elizabeth's costume started changing and it got a little more sexual in nature. I found that a little off-putting at first, but actually reflecting and talking about it, that may have actually just been part of the metaphor of her maturing and growing up.
Yeah, like started out very sweet, childlike, and then gradually, you know,
becoming a woman,
wearing her mother, finding her mother's dress,
right?
You guys are more, you know, a lot more about music than I do, and I didn't catch this at first. Whenever you're going through at the very beginning, Booker's just reached Columbia and you're walking through, and the men's choir on the
barbershop quartet.
The barbershop quartet comes down singing. Columbia is supposed to take place in 1918. Did you guys catch on that the song was...
A Beach Boys song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way out of place.
Yeah.
Because I didn't. I just thought, oh, this is an older song. Okay. I didn't know it was that old. Okay. I kind of wish I would have caught on and been like, what? Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where it adds something, but doesn't take away if you don't pick up on it.
Well, here's my embarrassing admission, is that I didn't notice it. I listened to the song and did not notice it, and enjoyed it and just kind of like kept on going because I was looking at everything. And it wasn't until later that I can't remember what the next thing was, but it might have been Everybody Wants to Rule the World. When I heard that, it was like, wait, hold on a second. Something's happening.
Is Girls Just Want to Have Fun, is that at one point like in
that's on
in
the beach.
Gunmaker shop?
Or that's on the beach. It's playing like on a an old-time organ.
Yeah.
Okay. I loved that. That was the one where I thought, like, okay, that is recognizable. Like this, you know, because it's not stretching it nearly as much as the quartet was stretching Beach Boys.
The Beach Boys song, I didn't even get that until like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Because it came up on Song Pop.
Oh.
And then I was like, wait a minute. then it kind of...
So Song Pop got the reaction that Bioshock Infinite was going for. I like that.
And it's
so funny. Obtuse to music.
Well,
it's beautiful. Yeah. Like, I would rather hear the Bioshock version than I would the Beach Boys version.
Yeah.
I just think it's so well done. I think the music overall in this game is so well done. I would probably rather listen to CCR's Fortunate Son than I would to the Bioshock version. But all in all, the music is just so well done in this game.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. I remember there being a lot of commentary about, hey, look, color. Oh my God, they're using color in a game and not just browns and grays. And I love the Fallout. I love Fallout games so much, but I get sick of the sepia tone.
Well, and I'm glad you bring up color, because I was really worried when I saw the screenshots and trailers and everything for Bioshock Infinite. I was really worried that horror element that I loved so much from Bioshock was not going to be in Bioshock Infinite. And I was so pleasantly surprised that it was. And it was done in a manner that traditional horror storytelling is done, where you set a norm and then you fuck with that norm to inspire terror and fear. While Bioshock just kind of drops you in, here's weird shit, and it kind of tapers off about three quarters of the way through the game. You're kind of used to it. But I feel like in Infinite, it built and built and built to the point where this once bright and colorful environment you're in is now stormy and dark, and it almost had that feeling of, like, I wouldn't have been surprised if a splicer skittered across the damn cobblestones, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's weird, because I didn't have that reaction with the game at all, because I felt like the first Bioshock was, if I could use a word to describe it, I think it would be intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like there was a lack of intensity in Infinite, but it traded on that lack of intensity in a depth and a richening of the emotion to the story. Because there was, when the stuff with the Order of the Crows, was that it?
Mm-hmm.
The John Wilkes Booth section. That section was a little bit like, ooh, okay. Now it's getting kind of dark and creepy.
Especially with the Crow Knight as well.
Yes.
That's, I will say, as far as Infinite goes, I was disappointed in the lack of variety in who you're fighting.
Yeah.
Because I remember in Bioshock, it was very much like, oh shit, this is a new splicer.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
What is this?
Exactly.
The feeling that fear.
Or the Houdini
is revealed.
And just being like,
oh my God.
I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had that moment with, kind of had that moment with the handyman, except they show you the handyman early in the game before the action starts. So it wasn't like this initial shock of like, what the fuck is that?
If you'd seen it in like poster form or advertisement and then got one thrown in your face, that would have been better.
I had that feeling with Songbird. The first time I saw Songbird, I was like, oh shit, I'm going to have to fight that thing later on, which doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, thankfully.
Because Songbird would kill the shit out of
A,
you.
A, Songbird's a badass, and B, as far as the story goes, it works a lot better the way that things turn out.
As a dungeon master in tabletop games, I've gained an appreciation for foes you should mess with that are just permanently out of your league, as opposed to you're playing a protagonist that you're going to get powerful enough where you can take whatever this thing is, and you expect to be able to take it, so it eliminates the element of fear of anything. You just feel like if you wait long enough, like that's in any Final Fantasy, or that's just kind of what happens.
Sure.
You wait long enough till you're a demigod, then you
grind and grind and grind until you can kill whatever you want.
Yeah, I think the thing that really contributed to the absence of horror for me in Infinite was that, as opposed to Bioshock, I always felt like there was a way out. I always felt like, even though it doesn't make logical sense.
Yeah.
It's,
I don't think there was a way out. There was a way out physically. It's not as claustrophobic.
Yeah.
But there's no way. You've got so much invested in Elizabeth.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
You're not just going to up and go. It's kind of a different restraint.
Right. But Elizabeth can take care of herself and she'll come with me and we'll blah, blah, blah. The entire game was definitely for me all about figure out how to take care of Elizabeth.
Uh-huh.
But there were just so many times in Bioshock where it felt like there's no place to go.
That is
true. There's no way out. As opposed to Infinite, which gives you so many options with the Skyhook system. I had the enhancement on where you are invulnerable for like 3 seconds after hooking onto the Skyhook or 3 seconds after dropping off of it.
See, I had one, I had a similar piece of gear that gave me 3 seconds of invulnerability after eating.
Yeah. So,
or gaining health.
Yeah.
That actually brings me to another question, not to completely derail you, but what were your favorite vigors? I want to know what everyone used.
Gosh.
Do you have any go-tos or did you switch it up regularly?
I used Possession a lot.
Yeah.
I really liked Possession. And apparently a lot of people really liked Bucking Bronco, but I never used it.
Yeah, I rarely used it as well. My go-tos were Possession. Possession's a no-brainer because it's an instant kill and you get a little bit of help for a couple seconds. And then the other one, I loved Return to Sender. I'm surprised that being a number one Magneto fan, because that's always what I felt like, because I would walk into a room and just pop Return to Sender, and then I would be able to just walk around in melee guys while they're just firing at me. Tyler, do you have any go-tos?
Shock Jockey. I'm more of a fan of the guns than I am Vigors and Plasmids.
Uh-huh.
So I would just, I liked Shock Jockey, run up and do something with a gun or the melee attack. I did like, I can't think of it at the time, the combination between the Kraken, the water one, the last one you get, and Shock Jockey.
Yeah.
Because it had, you know, there were a certain set of combos you could do with each, with the Vigors.
I heard from Josh, and Josh, of course, of Uniracers fame, and since then from other people about how broken the Murder of Crows Vigor is, especially when you upgrade it so that if someone is killed while they have the crows on them, they become a crow trap. Because what can happen is that grows like a virus. Like someone will die with the crows, become a trap. Someone else will set that off. Another person will come and set it off.
Yeah.
Be swarmed by crows, die, set a trap, and it just keeps going and going and going.
I think I used Murder of Crows once or twice to get the combo for the achievement, but I never...
I used it.
It was not a go-to at all.
Yeah.
I used it about as much as I used the B one in Bioshock.
Oh, God. Yeah, I didn't. It was interesting in the trailer, but I never.
It's just hard for me to wrap my head around for some reason. It's like if I can't wrap my head around why this is happening, I have a problem doing it.
Yeah.
And like water spraying out of my hand doesn't bother me in the same way that a bunch of crows flying out of my hand does. And I will say this, now that we're talking about Vigors, that was just so that everyone doesn't think that the entire time we're just going to be lauding Bioshock and Infinite as if they did nothing wrong. That was something that upon further examination of the game, because, you know, immediately after playing the game, I was like, oh my God, what a triumph. What a universal triumph. And it is. It's wonderful. But there are some problems with it. And one of the problems that I had was plasmids fit in very much to the world.
They do. I'm so glad you were bringing this up, because I have a problem with this as well. Please continue.
But Vigors don't fit into the world of Columbia in the same way. And
they're just there.
And if they did work, there's no reason for them to be there except for the fact that it is a Bioshock game. Why isn't everyone just walking around with these Vigors?
Well, in a city state that is regulated and keeping everyone in check, Vigors would not be available to the public.
Yeah.
I mean, that part doesn't make sense to me.
Like Possession, whatever is at the beginning.
But they're literally giving it away to you.
Right.
They're giving it away, and then you go and you just find ways to get money back. Here, please, steal all of our money.
I had issue with that, too, so I'm really, really glad that you brought that up.
And that's another thing, too, is that we're, like, we probably all recognize that we're not saying anything, like... I generally think that people who, like, play Bioshock and enjoy Bioshock for, you know, kind of anything beyond it just being a shooter are educated, interesting people who, you know, probably go out and seek out reviews and commentary on the kind of media that they enjoy. And we're probably not saying anything that you haven't heard. We're probably saying stuff that, you know, you've heard before. But, you know, we're just saying it our own inimitable way.
Well, I never really thought of the horror thing you just brought up. I mean, because you're the horror guy. You love horror movies.
Oh, I love
you're
horror.
You're the horror aficionado.
Horror fiction. I love it.
I've got no base. So I didn't even... I got... Because if I'm using my terminology right, like, I feel Bioshock and Rapture, that was, like, a very visceral fear.
Yes.
And then Columbia was a very cerebral fear. And yeah. I didn't get the fear. Like, I just felt, oh, well, there are people here, it's bright and colorful, they just don't want it to be, you're, like, the same, dropped off. I'm glad you, I didn't even think about you saying, you know, rules of horror, it totally fits.
Yeah.
I didn't get that.
It twists the norm, and I love that. And I can give you a great example, because you go into a shop in the game earlier on that is completely normal. Later in the game, after Elizabeth has torn open tear after tear after tear, the shop is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this glitched out woman that's just sweeping at the fire. That is a great example of setting a norm and then turning it on its head to create a feeling of uncomfort.
And especially, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Discomfort, I was correcting myself.
And especially after that first real tear where you go through and
with
you go
Chen.
Back up into the room
uh-huh.
where you just killed those people.
Right.
And they are...
glitching the fuck out.
And have basically completely lost their minds. That was a bracing moment,
yes.
Certainly.
I think it's funny because at first I had a problem with Infinite because in Bioshock, you coming back to life and trying again kind of made sense with the Vita Chambers. I always had an issue with... That's what they were called, right? Vita Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always kind of had...
You turn them off. That was a much better option to play through, but...
You could turn them off? Mm-hmm. And what would happen then?
You would start off from, like, your last save.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever, instead of...
Okay.
Mm.
Well...
Being able to pop back up and just rush back in from a...
I didn't know that. The Vita Chamber was kind of like, okay, well, this is... They're trying to explain why you're trying... You're able to try again. But there's some holes there where it's like, well, how the fuck do you get... I mean, how does that happen? None of
why
that
is everyone
explained.
Not just using these?
Right, exactly. But what I love...
Why are you not constantly being murdered by these people?
What I love about Infinite is that at first you don't know why they let you try over and over again. Because when Elizabeth is with Booker, she will heal him back, which is great. When she's not, Booker winds up back in his office and you open the door to his office and step back out into Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I love that's explained later on, not directly, but you can infer that, oh, well, this is because this is another Booker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's explained away that it's like, oh, well, this is since
one
there's millions
of places.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Infinite is a very good description. They're infinite bookers.
It's and you know, we haven't even hardly touched on the Lutesses. I'm just bringing them up.
I know I'm going to see so many of those at Dragon Con.
Oh yeah.
I think we're going to see more Elizabeths. I think we are just going to be up to our fucking eyeballs in Elizabeths.
Kudos to the people out there who decide to do a mechanized Patriot outfit, because that's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So. Kudos.
We're going to go as Fink and Daisy, but was she the rebel leader?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Daisy Fitzroy, Vox Populi. That was another thing I will say that I really enjoyed, because it's so easy to make the rebel faction just good guys.
Yes.
So easy to make them good guys. And man, the Vox Populi are not good guys.
No.
By any stretch of the imagination.
I think it's a statement about authority.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of this game. I mean, there are a lot of statements, obviously, but I think a lot of it is authority and power and how it corrupts. Because starting out as not such a great guy, obviously, I guess corruption and salvation are reoccurring.
I saw a lot of kerfuffle about how there were some people who were basically talking about how Bioshock Infinite was a strictly political statement, and it was about sort of the Tea Party and about how they worship the founders and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, those people obviously did not play this game.
Right.
Just like Bane and Batman was a dig on Bane Capital for Midron. Chicken the fist, ah!
Well, I mean, I don't think it was a dig at the Tea Party, but I think it is an interesting observation that maybe it's not such a good idea to uphold political figures as deities.
Yeah, I wouldn't even said that it was the Tea Party. I just would have said it was a statement of America overall, mm-hmm. just American imperialism.
American exception.
Right.
Yeah. Exceptionalism. Sorry. Yeah. I think that that's an argument that could really be made very well if it wasn't for the fact that the Vox Populi are there. And man, the Vox Populi are there, and they are...
What are the first thing they do? They reappropriate the Patriots.
Yeah.
And do exactly the same thing that Comstock was doing.
Just as terrible.
Uh-huh.
Just as terrible. And I spent this whole time trying to figure out, Daisy Fitzroy, she's going to be my buddy.
Right.
She's going to be my pal. And immediately it is revealed that she is nobody's pal. She is certainly not your pal. No one is your pal except for Elizabeth.
I felt like there were some dangling plot points mm-hmm. in Infinite that I hope are addressed in DLC. Like, I hope the DLC is treated in a smart manner. I hope they're treated the same way that the game is treated.
What would you like to see be addressed in DLC, Dave?
I want to see what goes on with Fink. I feel like that...
Yeah, we didn't get nearly enough of him.
I was disappointed because I feel like Fink was more of a plot device than he was a character.
Yeah, even though he's there. You see his face.
Right. So hopefully that's addressed in DLC because I kind of felt like, that's something that obviously there's a thread, but it just didn't. It just meandered. I don't think it went anywhere. That specifically, I would like to see, and maybe this is because I didn't get all of the voxophones, I would like to see more. I'd like to see the Lutesses mm-hmm. expanded upon, because there's not a whole lot of the science, quote unquote, the science explained as to how this is working. It kind of makes it makes for a very convenient plot device, but it kind of feels like magic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it makes sense.
Like insofar as how they were able to make it work mm-hmm. or the effects of making it work.
How mainly, but I'm more interested in the effects. Although I just want it so bad to not feel like magic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I want to know more about that. And like I said, it may be in those 10 voxophones that I missed.
I feel like the DLC is going to take place in this one place that I found, one of the DLCs, because there's an apartment tower that you have to have lockpicks to get into. And when you get in, there's an elevator that's smashed and another that's out of order, and that's it.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I remember there being speculation that that will be DLC.
Okay.
Going up into that tower and the people that are in the tower and things like that will be something. That apartment complex is something.
I imagine that because, frankly, they've just received too much attention. I think that the Lutesses definitely figure into the DLC in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
I would also kind of be surprised if Songbird wasn't addressed at some point.
Yeah, that's true, too. I forgot to mention Songbird because I feel like there's a story there that is not explained. Because at some point you see Songbird, sans bird helm, right?
Do you?
I could have sworn.
Did I miss this?
I could have sworn that you did very, very early in the game. Maybe I mistook him. Maybe I mistook a handyman for him.
Oh, wow. I don't recall that.
But I was just under the impression that Songbird was a modified handyman.
Yeah.
I remember a Vox phone about an experiment or something like that between animal and man and things like that, and it being a powerful abomination. I remember some kind of that had happened at some point. They didn't say it was Songbird.
Right. You can infer.
Yeah. I don't know. I would almost be okay with them not, because I do. Like Songbird's story, for what it was told so beautifully. I would be okay if they didn't touch Songbird, but I don't know. I would be surprised if they didn't, I guess. I just feel like there's something there.
I hope it's not just a cash grab where it's play a Songbird! Sword through the skies, destroy Zeppelins, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let me kind of shift around a little bit.
Okay.
Across BioShocks, what moments were things that gave you chills or made an impact on you, like specific moments in the trilogy.
I mean, would you kindly? That's, to me, the moment. That is above everything else. Like, would you kindly? Seeing that written and feeling your brain shift around. Wait a second. Hold on. None of this makes sense and everything makes sense.
And the second playthrough is even sweeter whenever you realize, fuck, he did this a lot.
Time. Yeah. But I will also say that the moment that ripped my heart out was Elizabeth's pinky. Like, as
when it's explained,
as she was being pulled through the tear, Elizabeth's pinky, and just seeing that pinky fall to the ground was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
I don't think any of us are going to heap much praise onto Bioshock 2, because I feel like Bioshock 1 laid out a good story, Bioshock 2 cleaned up the mechanics, and then you put them together and you get Bioshock Infinite. But a moment in 2, because you found it, I didn't, and I wish I'd found it, the Xander Cohen Bioshock 2, whenever you get whisked away and see him again.
Yeah.
Is a very, if you describe the moment, because you experienced it and I didn't.
It's when you follow around a shifting plasmid and you have to keep finding it in different places.
Yes.
Then you get the plasmid and it teleports you into...
I forgot about this. You're bringing it back.
And it teleports you into three different places until finally you get teleported into a place where all you see are, it's a statue in the style of the Xander Cohen statues from 1. And I don't know how it went for anyone else, but I approached the statues and turned around and at the last moment saw the roses disappear in the way that the Houdini splicers would disappear. And then suddenly I was back. And it was, that did give me chills.
It was, I think, the best throwback I'd heard in Bioshock 2.
Arguably, to me, you can't really consider, like, Andrew Ryan a villain, you know, any more than you can consider. Like, I also don't consider people like Comstock a villain. They're not villains, they're just characters in this world. But Xander Cohen, what a villain. What an amazing guy. The Fort Frolic area was just so beautifully done. Yeah. And was why I had a lot of faith. And I had, you know, and I did enjoy Bioshock 2 because my understanding is the head level designer behind Fort Frolic is the person who headed up the team behind Bioshock 2. And also the moment toward the end in Bioshock 2 where you played as the little sister.
Yes.
Was really interesting.
I really enjoyed that too, yeah. Looking through the rods, that was a really poignant, you know, setting.
Sorry, I guess there are some spoilers for Bioshock 2. So, might be.
I know I expressed mine in an earlier show, but the very beginning of Bioshock, essentially, when you first meet a splicer, you go around that corner and you see that tunnel.
Is it someone new?
Yeah. And then then there's the baby carriage.
Yes.
And then the very stark and stylized shadow on the wall. Yeah. Just the imagery was so well done. That was the moment that I had when I was like, oh, this is something.
Yeah.
This game is something.
And hearing Ashley shake when he was telling me about Bioshock, whenever he would sink it behind and just listen to splashers talk for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just their crazy dialogue. Whenever he was able to sneak up onto a baby carriage before it went off, or a splasher attacked, and you see like the gun disguised. And those, I mean, remember him disguising those moments. So those were the key moments for him playing through Bioshock.
How about you? Anything we haven't mentioned yet that really did it for you?
I remember seeing going through like the very first area with the surgeon in the first Bioshock.
Yes, I was actually just about to say that.
Seeing him mess with people's faces and then like the posters and things like that. Yeah. Whenever you see him trying to get everything right.
Well, I actually loved going into the first section of it and seeing, what is it, above all, do no harm, written in blood.
Yeah.
Like that just pretty little twist on the Hippocratic Oath. It was so nice. So nice.
And that woman's transformation of trying to, you find her box of bones about her getting those surgeries and slowly becoming twisted and you hear him cutting and her screaming and at the end of the box, or they're not box bones, but they're recordings when they cut off in the first one.
And also I'll say in that area, where the first sort of real jump scare in the game for me, when you go into the dentist's office and there's like a trail of bandages, and there's a character, there's a person on the gurney, and then mist obscures your vision, and then the mist comes up and there's no one on the gurney anymore, right. And then you go and you see a plasmid over in the corner and you go to pick up the plasmid, and then mist obscures your face and it comes back up and everything's fine. You turn around and there is a guy behind you. I was playing that section at immediately after, because I got my Xbox 360 and the first game that I got was BioShock, and I was playing it at my girlfriend's house, Claire. Hello, Claire.
She listens.
Of course she listens.
Avid listener, Claire.
Don't all of my ex-girlfriends listen to this? Don't they all just wait to hear my voice?
Oh, Jacob's on Dad Bog?
Subscribe. And we were playing at her house and turned around and saw the splicer behind us. And we both screamed out loud in the middle of the night when her parents were upstairs. I'll react to games. Oh my God. But like actually screaming is pretty rare.
Yeah.
But man, that got me. Yeah,
that's what I knew that had to be what you're talking about. Like, okay, my brother had a first gen 360. It red ringed, and he just sat it aside. And Wiley Ammons of Super Star Wars,
Mustachioed Cleric,
yeah, he really good with, you know, technology fixing things.
Sure.
He fixed it, and we gave it to James, another friend. James has been on the show. I've thanked his wife, Joanne Livingston, for being the most avid Tadpog liker on Facebook. I gave it to him. I found BioShock on sale at that same Walmart I bought it at for $360 for like $5. So I bought it, took it to him. We were sitting there playing it, and that is the exact moment he lost his shit as well in that moment. If he gets scared, he just kind of leans and his eyes get wide. I've never heard him have like a big reaction like that.
Yeah.
But he just... So I think that's a very universal good BioShock moment.
Yeah.
These games are so good, y'all.
They are.
They're so damn
very,
good,
very
y'all.
Good.
There are certain artists in the world that, like, you just get to a point where you automatically trust them. You know that the example that I've recently used is I will see any movie directed by Darren Aronofsky, Christopher Nolan, or Chan-Wook Park, because based off of their previous films that I've seen, they do really great work. So I will happily see that.
Not M. Night Shyamalan?
Not M. Not anymore. Hey, listen. I love Unbreakable as much as the next guy, but I hate that I have to wait so long for another game like this to come out. But if this is the kind of product, then I'm willing.
Yes.
Because it's so good.
Yes. I'd it's much rather so play another great game like BioShock or BioShock Infinite than have something rushed out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Ken Levine. Yes, George R. R. Martin. Yeah, come on. Can't you take him? Well, you get to take your time, but...
Yeah. It's...
And then people like that with Robert Jordan, too. You know, oh, wheel of time, pick your time, Robert Jordan. Oh, he died. Okay.
But Ken's young. Ken's got time.
Yeah.
Ken's got time.
George R. R. Martin, on the other hand, I'm really worried about that. But that's another podcast.
But I don't know. I can always satisfy myself with the Fallouts of the world and the Watch Dogs and the whatever. But man, the last time I played a game that affected me as much as BioShock Infinite, it was BioShock.
Yeah.
Like that's the line.
Yeah. I can't think of another game that had the same emotional toll on me. A video game that had an emotional toll, like BioShock and BioShock Infinite. As much as I love Fallout, there's not any moment in Fallout that I'm... Maybe in Fallout 3, whenever you're in the simulation, in Pleasant Park, something like that. That came close.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that came close, but not the same.
And
there
are a lot of fun, like, silent stories in Fallout 3 and and New Vegas, where you stumble upon a life, but it's never really explained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A room full of plungers.
Yeah. And that's nice. In the same way that, you know, in Silent Hill with the toilet where knock, knock.
Oh, man.
Knock back and you open the door.
That's the most scared I've ever built in a video game is Silent Hill 3 in that moment.
Yeah. Those little unexplained stories are lovely. And Scratch is a completely different itch from the BioShock games, because the BioShock games are definitely a very focused, directed experience that an auteur is forcing you to have, as opposed to an open world experience where you are crafting your own enjoyment. Like, that's not what's happening. Like, the enjoyment in BioShock is because someone is making you have fun, as opposed to Fallout, where you kind of make your own fun.
Yeah, I can remember playing Fallout 3 for the first time. I didn't have fun. I was just stressed out about it until I got a house. And then I went out and made my way in the world.
Now I have a place to put all of my things.
Yeah. I think I restarted 3 or 4 times trying to get the right goat score and stats that I wanted to try and get in a Megaton and get a house or go into Timpani Tower and get everything done there. Like, I just, before I finally just went in.
God, I had fun in Timpani Power. But that's Timpani Tower. But I guess that's another for another day.
Yeah.
Mm. That becoming zombies was one of the biggest twists. That blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be talking about Fallout 3 too, Ramon. So deal with it.
I love BioShocks.
They're so good. They're so good, you guys.
So many red beards and so many perfect Ben Franklin spectacles.
You guys, I'm so glad that we, like, out of the three of us, I was the first one to finish. I bought the game and immediately just devoured it. And the day after, like, I just kept trying to, like, talk to people to be like, please, just someone, is there anyone out there in the world who's finished this so that I can just talk to them? Please, please, God. Like,
I think I was, like, 5 hours in by the time you'd beaten it.
It got so bad that I was to a point where, like, I called Leva and was like, Leva, has Cruz beaten BioShock Infinite?
Oh, man.
I want to please.
That being James' ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend, that's how desperate he was to talk to somebody.
Although, in fairness to Leva, we broke up like 7 years ago at this point.
So like this is last week down here.
It's not like it's fresh. So, but, you know, it's like, I just wanted to talk to anyone about it. I wanted to talk to anyone. I was in the drive-thru on the phone with Leva saying, is Cruz playing it? Just tell him to play it. Tell him to play it right now. I just want someone to talk to about it. So I'm so glad that we got to talk about it. And you know, the amazing thing about the BioShock games is that we've spent quite a while talking right now.
I'm not editing this one. I'm just going to let this one roll.
Toss it
up. You don't need to. I think we're good.
There is going to be...
Yeah, this is free. Normally, you have to pay for this. Normally, this is behind the paywall. But...
And I guarantee that there's going to be someone who says, oh man, I can't believe you guys didn't mention this.
Oh God, yes.
So, hey, Tadpog listeners, that's what we would love. How about, why don't you guys comment on the Facebook page, toss up a comment, tell us what amazing part of BioShock that we didn't even cover.
I missed the wrench. I really missed the lugging around the wrench.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the big sisters in BioShock 2. I thought they were a very good enemy.
Yeah. I don't know. And I also, weirdly, I didn't mind killing the big sisters in the way that I felt really sad when I killed the big daddies.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They were just enemies. Big sisters were jerks.
Yeah. So let's hear what you guys have to say about it.
I love it.
Since it's on the Facebook page, try to semi-avoid spoilers for people who might have not played BioShock. Semi.
Or call again. Just call in. You can call in and rant.
Call in.
Or use double speak.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love these games.
Yep.
I do, too. I'm ready to end the show, though.
Let's end it.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Do you want to give the phone number and other information and whatnot?
You know, I think I forgot to give the phone number on our last episode.
I think you did. Mm-hmm. You'll probably have to...
You mentioned, I forgot, and you look it up.
And then never did.
You can record it and toss it in there somewhere at the end, right?
Mm-hmm. If you do want to call in and let us know what we missed, your favorite moment of BioShock or BioShock Infinite, give us a call at 270-883-2555. Until then...
Thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star review. Not sure when this is coming out. Don't know what we're talking about next. Mm-hmm. It'll be an IGN game. Mm-hmm. It'll be in the top 100.
It'll be good.
Strong chances that I won't like it. Mm-hmm. Dave might like it, but
yeah,
it's how it rolls. Until we hit like hit the strong 50s, then the tone's going to change.
Then we're going to like everything.
Yep.
In the meantime, as always, Jacob, you know, you can find us on tadpog.com.
I do know that.
Facebook.com/tadpog.
Right.
Once again, Jacob, thanks for stopping by the studio.
Of course. I'm so glad that I just happened to stumble in here.
All the chili you brought over for us to eat is getting cold. So, oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Quite the culinarian, Jacob.
I ate it all. I'm full of beans.
Our intro song, if there is one, played at the beginning of this episode. Who knows? This may go up truly raw.
I wish I wish that we could get a barbershop quartet to cover Moves.
Would be great. However,
Man.
I don't want to wait to publish this episode for that. That's it? That's all you got? Can you harmonize with yourself?
I need more.
You're like looking at me with eyes like, please help, Dave. Please. And I'm just looking back at you like, jump you started this, fucker. Like, finish it.
Take the baritone.
But if you heard music at the beginning of the show, that was probably Moves by Sycamore Drive. And a track to that can probably be found on tadpog.com.
Thanks for sticking through. Hopefully you love Bioshock and you found this insightful. Or if you did know anything about Bioshock and you're like, what the fuck's going on with this episode? It's a special one. You can skip it. If it's not on the IGN Top 100, it's okay.
We just do it for fun.
That's the show.
Thanks.
And it's gone.
And...
hold on. Edit this.
No, nope, absolutely not. That was the worst.
Just make it
pussy ass sneeze I've ever heard.
Just make it the stinger.